Blog Talk Radio.
Put our heads together, reconsider, revision, reevaluate. Being an order founded on men of conscience, men of compassion, but ultimately, I think we can agree, great imagination. Throwing the fates to the wind, so to speak, planting an enriched a concept into the landscape and watching it grow, and knowing that it has the kind of the genes that will resonate and just continue to thrive. It's not a matter of survival. It's a matter that the craft answers questions. Not that the world has always been a safe place for us, because we have to recognize that what we wish in our hearts and what we want in our minds and what we think is right is not always what prevails. That good people, people living near us and around us, can be provoked into great, unusual acts of insanity. We have examples of unusual events happening around us. So here we have a bit of a, what do you call it, a safe haven, perhaps? A time, the most valuable thing that you and I have is our time. And so, not to waste yours or mine, I have a really interesting commentary today. I think you're going to like the poetry that I've found. But, of course, deep breaths. This is going to push some ideas in and out, just like our lungs taking in oxygen. You know, we spend a great deal of time doing and being according to what other people think we ought. Not only as an order, but as individuals. Being ourselves and being understanding ourselves is not license to be ill-mannered, to be cruel or harsh or demeaning, to be a blight on the world. It can be abused, and certainly has. Lesser minds than yours and mine will take it that way. No, this is an opportunity for best foot forward, for being the bigger person. The concepts, I think, although you and I might want to cling to some really interesting gender bias here, the concepts of what we're talking about seem to transcend gender. Give us some thought. What is the gender of compassion? What is the gender of an obligation? What is that? It's like asking anybody, what is the gender of the great architect of the universe? Oh, really? My simple mind is going to be the one to determine that on behalf of the Godhead? Yeah, I don't think I'm ready to quite accept that. We are devout in our own way. We have an emerging and nascent sense of our place in the universe around us and the beauty of the things that occur. And if we're fortunate, we live in a place that has an aesthetic. Where I am, as you probably regular listeners probably know, is a place where nature still has a profound impact on the aesthetic. Oh, yes, I long for the days when I can walk down the street and see beautiful street art and sculpture and architecture. But we've spent a great deal of time being practical. A small group, a small nation, just like your nation was one time. 160 years into the history of your nation, what did the streets look like? What were the sounds? What was the life expectancy? How was education handled? Was there justice? We're an audacious little place, but it fits so well with an audacious order, the order that never should have existed. Huh? So we're going to listen to a little bit of the music that never should have existed, but it does. It's the physics. This is from Chet Baker. Every time we say goodbye, I think you'll like it. Thank you. So hello, wherever you are. Hello. The sonic effect seems to be timeless. We're greeted in the afternoon by our listeners from South Korea and the Philippines and China and how many time zones. Hello to our Russian guests in India. Hello. It's a pleasure to have you with us. And Uganda and Cameroon and Brazil. Yeah, just coming into summer, aren't you? And of course, here, the U.S. and Canada and United Kingdom, hello. And very grateful for the support. France and Belgium and Austria. No, I would not forget the listeners there. You've like-minded. People with something similar in mind. Not too much of a stretch when we're thinking about a brotherhood. How much more could be done? Of course, it's almost limitless. How much more could be done if we took that feeling of brotherhood just one step further? Could we? This isn't for me to impose on you. This isn't a question for you to reveal to me in any way. This is a question you know the answers in the privacy of your heart, the secret. Are we as fraternally supportive and generous as we are, as we can be, as we should be? When we're faced with decisions that aren't quite to our liking, is that the source of protest? It is easy to lose track of the context, the picture, the direction. Easy. Daily life is full of turmoil, and those are very interesting distractions. Easily can we be distracted by what's going on around us in our daily life, the decisions, the ups and downs. As much as we want to claim that we can predict the future, we don't. We don't really, truthfully, know what tomorrow is going to bring. But right now, we live in that moment where we can share and communicate. I tend to think seriously about, give serious thought to the notion that perhaps that time, not perhaps, that time is in the imagination, much of it is in the imagination, except the moment, the experience that we have right now. I do think that our past is exists only in our minds, and as does the future. What we select from it, we do have tendencies, don't we? We tend to sanitize our histories. We remember the good bits, which is probably good psychologically, I think. We hopefully are able to face more of the truth of our history and admit our mistakes. When we're able to do that, see the fullness of history, then real growth and learning comes about. And I think calmness, once we learn how to accept that, certainly the craft takes us in that direction of acceptance, of self-acceptance. This is the tentative steps to becoming a more complete and wholesome aspect of who we are and how other people experience us. Empathy, it matters. It's not that we apply these rigors to others. We can't really do that unless we apply them to ourselves. Oh, perhaps I've stepped over a line here. Here, let me take that just a step further and talk about the commentary today. I think it's an interesting topic. It's sort of there, nevertheless, killing the artistry of masonry. Kind of a bleak title, wouldn't you say? Rosalind Chapel. Few buildings are more powerful in the history of Masonic thought than this ubiquitous countryside folly. Tongue in cheek about the folly. To dismiss it as architecture built as decoration, disguising some other purpose, may simply be easier on the uninitiated than for us. Let's take a deep breath and begin again. Why are we still killing the talented apprentice that comes along, one in a thousand? Let us not quibble about whether we commit the deed. Let us assume, if we can ever agree on the evidence, that there is a satisfactory answer. What could possibly motivate us to be satisfied that the perpetrator was contrite when this is nothing short of an existential threat? Has Masonic bureaucracy become swollen? Well, yes, it has. Grown probably citing teleological effort, bureaucracy meets the needs of masonry. So killing off talent is necessary to preserve the integrity of masonry as we know it? It's a question. Does this statement explain to you the state we are in today? So worried are we of innovation that we label every creative idea, every innovation, a threat to our integrity. Does that seem inconsistent with the meritocracy narrative? It is reasonable to think the pushback of Grand Lodge drives innovation underground, leaving behind an approval driven largely by awkward Luddite fears. Awkward fears was enough. I apologize for overstating it. Louis Leroy, the French critic, had a point to make when he rejected Claude Monet's painting, Impression. Sunrise is not at all real art, but nothing more than impressions. But little did he know, Monet was painting in a style that was to excite Paris when the audacious unknowns rejected from a major jury show who rented a gallery and filled it with the work of Renoir, Manet, Degas, Cézanne, Matisse, Pizarro. Who knew? We can slowly murder the apprentice, but we cannot deny talent. That is actually supported and encouraged the artistry of, that we actually supported and encouraged the artistry of masonry. For Le Roy would remain an insult to real masonry. And yet it is part of our narrative. Of course we support it. Of course. Little Alice Coltrane for you. authentic. Alice Coltrane, Ramakrishna, and Turiya. That works. Thank you. Brilliant. Brilliant. Gave me an opportunity to freshen up my espresso and throw a log on the fire. It sets us in an interesting frame of mind. It almost makes me wonder, in some jurisdictions like where I am, we've become very, very self-conscious about music. Oh, even playing, having music in the lodge room, very self-conscious about it. It's odd. It's almost like there's an intimacy to it. You know how grown men sometimes struggle with that, acknowledging things that are, the tender emotion. The more we can do that and keep up the pretense, the less we need to deal with them. Except we're always dealing with them. Except we're dealing with them in the isolation of our own thoughts. But we tend to be, let's just say we tend to embellish. And we tend to confuse time. It's unfair. A mind full of don'ts and can'ts is a strange mind. It's almost like the source. We can determine that sense of dissatisfaction when we know there's something that we want to do, that we crave, but our mind is full of don'ts and can'ts. And as soon as we accept those that premise, then the path is blocked by our own hand, by our own doing. There should be no gathering of music. Music is to be enjoyed on an individual basis. Music is to be an individual, a single voice. Music is to be sung by two voices. Music is to be sung by small choirs. Music is to be choral. Music is for the wealthy. True music, true poetry is for the elite. None of this Robbie Burns nonsense. None of that. None of this music for the common man. Much has been done about the common man. He's had a few knocks along the way. Oh, seriously. We need to, as we unpack masonry, we can see if we keep these notions keen in our thoughts, then we're closer to finding our true nature. What happens? What would happen to you and I and to our order if we were to overcome the hesitance of old age, the hesitance of the can'ts and don'ts, that mantra that some of us have adopted? I can't do that. I'm too old to do that. I'm too young to do that. I don't know how. I've never been taught. I can't. It's just impossible. We've heard this. And the moment we accept that, then we make that our truth. It's not reality. And we can comfortably push every other notion aside. It's that idea that we have too many thoughts in our head and at this point. And so I'm not going to allow any new fresh ideas. And certainly not anything that's going to challenge my rooted beliefs. Well, that would make me feel a fool, wouldn't it? If most of my life I was dedicating myself to walking this path and all of a sudden there was new information that I reconsidered and actually changed my direction? No, we can't. That would be growth. That would be the kind of honesty that develops confidence. Oh, for us to have confidence in one another as a brotherhood, as a fraternal order, we need to be able to understand truth and be able to approach it, talk about it. No, not in the ham-fisted, muscular tedium that is often associated with groups of men. Certainly not. This is where we approach each other as gentlemen, as true Masons. And we do that by remembering. We came about by thoughtful discussion. But don't pretend. Don't pretend we don't know. You think this was somebody standing up on their hind legs screaming at a group of people, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to act. This is how we're going to organize. No, jeez. Think of the subtle conversation, leaning in. We've been meeting regularly. I think we all get a great deal out of these conversations. Here, it's safe. We can challenge the authorities in our conversation without it leading to, you know, drama. We can hold an idea in front of ourselves and examine it from different perspectives at the same time without necessarily determining that that's the way a person thinks because they are examining questions. That's not heretical. No, we're those groups that leaned in. By the way, friend, can I freshen your drink? No, we weren't. Hogarth's picture, no, that happened, sure, but think about it. Oh, the researchers will tell us that about the habits of the day. They were different than ours. But they didn't accomplish very much. We would never have accomplished much if we had just been whaled and just a continuous party without effort, without thought. Certainly not. Remember the year that gin was brought, we had a William and Mary, when the Orange Prince came, he brought with him Genova, the gin. And when people learned how to produce their own, they did it. It was cheaper than ales and beers, and brewers were having a time of it. But there's a particular year in history in the 17th century when history was not written because people in London was intoxicated. Huh. Funny that. You think that's how we really were? Of course it's an embellishment. But it points, it hints at some interesting parts of social and cultural evolution. Masonry has evolved. It still is fed by the curiosity, the minds, the imagination of thoughtful men. Oh, not every person that comes to the door will exhibit those qualities. That's why we have a ballot. As a brother of mine, demonstrating the 5 points of fellowship, do I deserve your honesty? Well, then, should we not use the ballot honestly? Should we not ask the question of preparation? Is this person prepared? And whose need are we addressing when we admit him to the craft? Ours or his or hers? It's a difficult world when keep thinking about creator and gender. Yet it's simpler and cleaner, more beautiful. It's like playing catch up, isn't it? Here, speaking of catch up, something pleasant. Some of you will recognize Charles Aznavour for the star. I think he just passed away, didn't he? This is one of his most beautiful pieces. I'll just get this set up for you and you'll like it.
Sans compter sur mes jours essuyés dans le sang, j'ai fait tant de projets qui sont restés en l'air. J'ai fondé tant d'espoirs qui se sont envolés, que je reste perdu, ne sachant où aller, les yeux cherchant le ciel, mais le cœur mis en terre. Hier encore, j'avais 20 ans, je gaspillais le temps en croyant l'arrêter. Et pour le retenir, même le devancer, je n'ai fait que courir et me suis essoufflé. Ignorant le passé, conjuguant au futur, je précédais de moi toute conversation et donnais mon avis que je voulais le fond pour critiquer le monde avec des hommes durs. Hier encore, j'avais 20 ans, mais j'ai perdu mon temps à faire des folies. Il ne me laisse au fond rien de vraiment précis, quelques rides au front et la peur de l'ennui. Car mes amours sont mortes avant d'exister, mes amis sont partis et ne reviendront pas. Par ma faute j'ai fait le vide autour de moi, et j'ai gâché ma vie et mes jeunes années. Du meilleur et du pire, en jetant le meilleur, j'ai figé mes sourires. Et j'ai glacé mes pleurs, où sont-elles à présent, à présent, mes 20 ans?
Easy to see why. That talent and that personality will be missed and well remembered. Time we take a moment to acknowledge some of our worth, and deservedly so. Perhaps a pat in the back. Nobody else is going to do it, and perhaps in the quiet of our rooms we'll offer it up, or when we see a good friend who shares our values and has the capacity. Remember, we're always mindful and respectful. We don't assume that everybody can follow the narrative. It does take a knack. It does take an ability and intelligence, but that intelligence isn't measured by the quality of the shoes being worn. No. Let's talk a little bit about these, unpack some of the symbols, some of the knowledge that's been around. You know, those icons that help us remember. What are we being asked to remember? There's only relevance. You're only a closed door means, and the rest of the time when you walk out the door, the values and qualities, the pomp and circumstance, the sense of self-direction doesn't occur. You must not have mirrors in your house or your lodge. Break those mirrors. We don't want to take a look at ourselves. That's very clear. Uh, here. Can I take you back a little bit? Unpack some information. The two ashlars are two stones of a cubic shape. The rough ashlar being, as its name implies, only roughly so and without any finish, while the perfect ashlar is, again, as its name implies, a perfect, well-finished and polished cube, the symbol of perfection. The rough ashlar represents the newly admitted candidate, the entered apprentice, and the object of masonry is, by the master's instruction with the assistance of his tracing board, to make that rough ashlar into the perfect stone which the perfect ashlar represents. On the English Grand Lodge certificate, the rough ashlar is shown with suitable tools lying on it, a maul and chisel, while the perfect ashlar has resting on it the compasses representing conscience, that final test which the true man applies to his work. Yeah. Is this your best work? Yes or no, that's your conscience. You're passing it in as your best, and it truly isn't. You know that in your heart. Oh, on most tracing boards, the rough ashlar is shown by the Corinthian column representing the junior warden. And the perfect ashlar is shown by the Doric column, which represents the senior warden. Traditionally, the junior warden is in charge of his apprentices, so that symbolically the rough ashlar is shown as under his control, while the senior warden has charge of the craftsman. In many lodges, this piece of symbolism is carried a stage further by the placing of ashlars in the lodge, either on the pedestal of or otherwise near to the warden concerned. Other lodges follow a different pattern by relating the ashlars to the corners of the lodge where the apprentice and craftsmen are placed to receive a charge on their being admitted to the degree. The history of the perfect ashlar is a little confused, for an ashlar is amongst the earliest symbols found in Masonic writings. Although it is as a prepared perpendicular, it is first found, it sometimes spelt in unusual ways. A perpendicular is a dress stone that extends through a wall from one side to the other, serving as a binding stone. This in itself provides a degree of symbolism, for binding together in friendship was an object of the craft. Further, if the average building stone was likely to be cubic in shape, then the shape of a perpendicular would be an approximate double cube, a shape which has had some significance in masonry and in which some later writers see a special symbolic meaning. The union of Grand Lodges in England in 1813 caused a good deal of rethinking of Masonic symbolism. None more than in connection with hieroglyphics of masonry as displayed on what we now call tracing boards. This involved the final and complete separation of the symbols of the three degrees into three separate groups and so into three tracing boards. The symbols matter. The kind of world that we live in, outside, we have a great number of symbols, great many symbols. We're bombarded with them. Ads and brands around us all the time. We can't go back to the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th. We can't go back in time. We can learn some of the valuable lessons. Masonry allows us to hide our secrets quite openly. Quite openly. I think that it's mischievous. I just love that part about the craft, that element of the craft. It's just remarkable. And even in lodges, there's secrets around us, and what we wear and how we go about our business. And they're there for the initiated. That means, do you get it? And a great many of us do. A great many of us do. And a great many of us are very, very good Masons. They're very dedicated to the provision of service. Make no mistake, that is enormously vital. All the fundraising I'm talking about, the generosity, not the meagerness. I was with a bunch of Masons once that were asked to consider benevolence for a widow. The brother had taken his own life, a troubled fellow. I only knew him at social events when he came with his two sons, little boys. And yet when they were asked, you know, after the tragedy, the young mother wanted to get away for a brief holiday with her two sons. I thought, well, I could see the healing benefit of that. The lodge felt that, some members of the lodge felt that this woman was trivializing. She was going out to play while the tragedy unfolded around us. What would you have done? How would you have handled that one? I don't ask easy. You know, life doesn't ask easy questions. Why should where would Masonic effects begin and end if we were to do that? There's a bit of something to help you savor that moment. You're sitting back and relaxing. There's a touch of jazz. You'll recognize
the voice. What are you doing the rest of your life? More than south and east and west of your life. I have only one request of your life. That you spend it all with me. All the seasons and the times of your deed. All the nickels and the dimes of your deed. Let the reasons and the rhymes of your deeds all begin and end with me. I want to see your face in every kind of light. I feel the dawn of forest in the night. And when you stand before the candles on your tree, you don't want to hear the silent wish you make. Those two rooms waiting deep in your eyes. In the world of love you keep in your eyes. I'll awaken with the sleep in your eyes. It may take a kiss or two. Through all of my life, summer, winter, spring, and fall of my life, all I ever will recall of my life is all of my life with you. Thank you.
Delicate little piece of music. It's Sting. Yeah. Surprising talent. Today I'm going to share a bit of poetry from the minds of those who are able to describe and connect with the soul of our universe in so many ways. This is Emil Adolf Gustav Verheeren. He's Belgian. He was born in the 21st of May, 1855. And he passed away on the 27th of November, 1916. But it was interesting. He wrote in the French language, and he was one of the founders of the School of Symbolism. It was interesting. He was born to middle class. He, as a boy, he's raised a lot of the people were speaking it low. There was a local Dutch dialect, but he adopted French as his language of the culture, and that was common for Belgian elites in the day. He went to he was sent to a strict boarding school run by Jesuits. And he formed a friendship with a boy who was a renowned poet, Georges Rodenbach. And then he went on to study law at university. And he wasn't with us very long, but he became a spokesman for the artistic revival at the turn of the century. And you can imagine today, if you came up with a radical type of poem, how would you expect the reaction to be? Kind or generous or mean-spirited or a mixture? Well, can you imagine back in the day when he was doing it, what kind of reaction? There was also a fascination. There were also, well, we're hearing, you know, what the mainstream is saying, it doesn't preclude the notion that there were also people curious and open-minded and wanting to examine a little more closely for themselves so that other people weren't doing their thinking for them. And gratefully, we have this work. This is called Infinitely. It's a tight little piece of work, but I think it expresses nicely the work of the man, of Emil. Nice work. The Hounds of Despair. It's a little bleak, but, you know, he's thinking of it in a metaphor here. The Hounds of Despair, the Hounds of the Autumnal Wind, gnaw with their howling the black echoes of evenings. The darkness immensely gropes in the emptiness for the moon seen by the light of water. From point to point over there, the distant lights, and in the sky above, dreadful voices coming and going from the infinity of the marshes and plains to the infinity of the valleys and the woods. Roadways that stretch out like sails and pass each other coming unfolded in the distance, soundless, while lengthening beneath the stars through the shadows and the terror of the night. But we mean want the world to have soft edges and perfect attitude. To achieve and appreciate and celebrate those moments, we need to be able to have contrast. That perfect moment contrasts with motions where we're facing challenges, Without them, without the benefit of those challenges, we wouldn't be able to savor the satisfaction that you pull from existence, while others pound their fists, resolutely convinced that their existence is a misery because of others. Taken to extremes, we have a world that natural law governs. Sometimes it seems ruthlessly, but in all cases, there's no appeal process. We clamor and fight for the freedoms that we have, and others want to take them away, and others have different opinions of them. Oh my goodness, certainly. Do we walk around paranoid all the time because of some dark deed that happens? No, no. We stand defiantly. To hell with you. This is what freedom feels like, and we'll deal with you, and your name will be stricken. I do like that idea, to tell you the truth. Somebody does those dark deeds, we stricken their name. It's never mentioned again. Notoriety. We do what we do, and I think you share this. For that very bent, withered old man that struggled to get to his feet while the young junior warden sat slumped in his chair, struggled to get to his feet to afford me the honors that my rank carried. And it's for that effort. Nobody could push him back down. That's respect. That is respect. I hope you've enjoyed the program today. I know it's short, but this is a meal that serves up things that are not what you want to eat every single day. It would be like me and smoked oysters. Not every, no. With a glass of Merlot. Are you offering up a glass of Merlot with that? That wouldn't kill you, would it? Well, if you're sitting down with me in the next couple of moments, we'll add a little something to our, maybe a little brandy to our coffee and take it from there, shall we? It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope you feel that I have your back in some ways. Carrying on with that sense of compassion, committing those acts of random Masonic kindness. I look forward to being with you again soon.
Sounds good. One, a two, and you know what to do. Close your eyes, close the door. You don't have to worry anymore. Thank you. But I said, oh, we're gonna forget it. Big old moon's gonna shine. We're gonna let it, baby. You won't regret it. Get your shoes on. I don't know what to feel. No, no, just bring that down. Bring it on.
That's Paul Trail, right? Mm-hmm. See you.